Ow! Oh, it hurts because it's back. Well, not so much as painful as getting your second COVID shot, but it actually kind of, yeah, we're here, and we're in the super secret location loaded at, known as 12737 Tamiami Trail. Yes! Just hidden in the secret depths and bowels of Northport, Florida. Yes, they didn't think I could remember it that long.
We actually had a dollar bill bet, Robert and I, on the table. That I bet he wouldn't remember. Robert said he would. And
except for to make it official, you actually have to autograph it and say you were wrong with today's date.
I was wrong.
We had quite a few of those at the old shop. I was wrong.
This will be the new one.
The day's
date. This will
be
the very first one.
Yeah, the very first one. Oh, boy. What a week. You know, a while back, the wife wanted us to get COVID vaccinations, and I don't care. I'm going to die from something. What's the difference? And as far as a tracker goes, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard of. Everybody in the country carries a tracker in their pocket. I mean, why would they even need to bother? So, and not only is it a tracker, it's a recorder, and it can take pictures of you. So, you know, oh, look at that. I was wrong. RJ. Anyway, nice. The reason I was bringing up the 12737 Tamiami Trail in Northport is because of Common Grounds. You're going to be starting that back pretty quick, aren't you?
We had open mic live last night. Went pretty well, and we actually had a studio audience in there, about 15 people.
If you like folk rock and you're in, you know, all that, years ago I would have said hippy-dippy beatnik stuff. But
acoustic music. Everything from bluegrass, a little bit of bluegrass, a little bit of blues, some folk, some singer-songwriter.
It's pretty cool night, and if you're sitting there wondering, you know, geez, you know, what am I going to do on a Wednesday night, you can come down and watch the live performances. So all that's interesting things, and, you know, one thing with this, the new government policies, it is not COVID causing the problems. It's government policies from our government. It's government policies in other governments. Everybody's going nuts, and what it did do was make, we thought it was going to be pretty easy getting the store open. We call this one, that one, the next one, and, you know, we're going to have our stuff. Well, it's absolutely did not work out. So we've been digging around and finding, and when we go to ICAST, today we've got $20-some thousand worth of stuff coming in from Quantum. And Robert says, are they doing the Bocas and Cabos? I said, I don't know. And he said, well, what rides did you get? I said, not much. The weird thing is they had very few reels to choose from and almost no rods. But they had a ton of combos with excellent warranties on them. And a lot of them are actually really nice. And they're going to go from about $30 to $150. But they're all balanced, well set up, nicely done. I said, well, if I can't get rods and I can't get reels, why not get them together?
Right.
Now, this goes along with nothing in the world makes sense. The company has almost no reels, little to no rods, but all the combos you could ask for, which is a rod and reel together.
Right.
So,
yeah, that makes no sense to me.
Why is it I can't buy the reels or the rods?
And how are you making
them together pre-mounted?
Yeah, and how are you making the combos if you don't have those two parts?
It's the chicken, the egg, the horse, the poop. I don't know. You know, I don't get how it all works, but it did work. And we've got literally just now as it's being delivered, actually probably ten minutes ago to 10 minutes from now, we're getting this massive, you know, several pallets of stuff coming in. And then we did hear from Penn, and our guys, the guys who sell to us, are all on their way to Kansas City to start loading trucks because they spent millions, tens of millions of dollars on an automated warehouse that, of course, does not work. So they've got everything stacked up in the manual warehouse, which luckily they didn't give up. And so all the guys who do the selling and the managers and all this other kind of stuff got to go in there and start pulling their orders. So we're looking about 2 to 3 weeks for Penn. No word at all on Shimano. No good news on the horizon. We've got a $20,000 order in with them. We have a bill this month for $264. We got two reels in. So, anyway, as you're looking at the world, we just ordered $11,000 worth of stuff from Daiwa, which will probably end up being about 8 or 10. But going on the thing there with Daiwa, what happened there is they've changed a lot of their company policies, corporate policies. Now, we're giving a 2-year in-store warranty on the Quantum stuff. If you buy a Quantum combo of, you know, $70 or more, you get a 2-year in-store warranty. Below that, it's like $100, you get 2-year warranty. Less than $100, you get a 1-year warranty. I've got to look over the paperwork. But we can do that in-store. But companies like Daiwa have switched their policy around so much, we're going to be able to offer little to no warranty on Daiwa stuff. And that was the same way as it happened with Shimano. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is because Quantum told me, and they gave me how many years they would warranty the product. And I looked at that and said, BS, I don't believe it. So we came up with 2 years as how long I figure we could legitimately take care of the customer with it. Never believe a corporation. They're going to lie to you. I don't have to lie. You know I'm a jerk. Why would I lie about it? You know, this is the way things are. But I'm getting the stuff in writing. So Quantum's going to have probably the best warranties on them. Bringing in Penn at second and Daiwa and Shimano with little to no warranties on them. This is how quickly everything can change.
Well, and not that it's no warranty. It's a warranty that's only through the manufacturer.
Right. You have to mail it back to the company. You have to deal with it all. We can do it, but there's going to be fees involved because they're charging us for everything. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why companies... We call it jumping over dollars to get to dimes. You know, people are pretty honest as a general rule. Right. You know, you've always got some that are jerks and want to play the system, but you can weed those out. But now, and the other cool thing, we've started getting a few of the smaller company orders in. And we went back to Eppinger. We went to Flats Intruder. We went, Egret. And we're going to a lot of these little companies getting American-made stuff that actually is being shipped for the price of a lot of the import stuff. So because of this pandemic and having to go back and find all these things, because I got lazy over the years. You know, I knew I could get this, and this by just making a phone call and get it. Well, now it doesn't work. You can't get it. So now you got to get creative. So we're getting as good or better products made here in the U.S. more than we've ever had, and they're available because they're not relying on the import.
Right.
Crazy. Who would have ever thought? And who would ever thought I wasn't smart enough to just do that 5 years ago? But I guess after 30 years, you get a little lazy and, okay, simpler to do this, and this. But now, can't get lazy. You gotta really work at it. And what, I do 4 to 10 hours a day on the phone?
At least, yeah.
So, but it's all working out. It's getting pretty cool. And this storm is just amazing. It's still causing death and destruction. Watching the videos come out through it last night of where Ida went. And we got another one down at the Atlantic coming across that's just off Africa, and it's already a depression. Oh, boy.
Welcome to September.
Yeah. fun times in Florida.
That's why cruise lines are always cheap this time of year to go into the Caribbean or the Gulf. There's a reason.
Well, what's funny is these ships actually do better out in the deep water than they would if they were tied up in port. At the dock, they can get very damaged, possibly sink. They have a much better chance of keeping these ships afloat and in good condition by getting them out of there. Even if they have to run into some 40-foot waves, they're better off gone.
Right.
So they kind of calculate where everything's supposed to be and can they shoot across in time. You know, there's stories of boats that were out during Ida when it hit Category 4 status with 80-foot waves. That had to be nasty.
Yeah, there's no way.
But
picture the few that have to stay with the oil rigs.
Yeah.
Because there's always got to be a few. They got to evacuate the majority of the people, but there's necessary people that have to be on there in case there's catastrophic failure of something.
So
how would you like to be on that rodeo ride?
I don't know. I've been out in some pretty good storms. But the weirdest part about this is Terry and I were talking, and when her and I here years ago, when you heard a tropical storm, you just thought, oh, how great is that? This is cool. We're going to, you know, she used to ride a Hobie Cat sailboat. I was a big windsurfer. We would be out enjoying the tropical storms. We never thought of them as a bad thing. We just thought, okay, we're going to get rain and we're going to go out and have some fun. Because you get out there and you got 45 mile an hour wind and you're on a windboard, you can hit speeds of over 60. And it's just, it's amazing how perceptions of everything have changed. That's, I think, the biggest thing for me, is everybody's afraid of the tropical storms and Category 1s. We needed that storm to come a lot closer to us. Did I want it here? Absolutely no. But the river's at one of the lowest points for this time of year I have ever seen it, like 600 cubic feet per second. That is low. It should be 1,400. It should be double that. So we've got very low water volumes. Why do I bring that into the equation? The only thing that kills red tide is fresh water that we know of. Now, there's guys out there said aluminum nitrate oxide or something like that will kill red tide. And they say it only feeds on this or it only feeds on that. Truth of the matter is, if you're absolutely 100% sure that this is all the only way it works, you're probably wrong.
All right.
But the one thing we do know is that fresh water will kill red tide. Once the Peace River drops below 500 cubic feet per second, we can get red tide all the way up to the artificial reef, and under 500 feet per second, we can get red tide back in Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda. It's virtually impossible when the water's flowing over 500 cubic feet per second. Too much fresh water.
And where are we at now?
600-something.
Wow.
We're teetering on the border of, yes, we could have another bad red tide in the harbor, because it's hitting intermittently off the Gulf, and for some reason or other, I haven't found out if Ida destroyed a lot of the red tide or not.
No, it didn't.
And
it's been little patches still.
Now,
especially up in Stump Pass area.
One of the probable leading causes of the red tide is Saharan dust, because the sawdust algae likes to feed on iron.
Right.
And we get iron in the water through the Saharan dust. So you get a big dust storm, blows across the Atlantic. This is about where it dumps out, and it drops a bunch of that dust particles into the Gulf of Mexico, kicks off the sawdust algae, which the red tide likes to feed on it. It's one of its favorite foods, so we get a big red tide bloom.
Pretty weird how one thing feeds the other.
Well, nature is all interconnected. And that's why there's all these unintended consequences when a government agency decides to do something, because they're just looking at that problem. And they're not looking at what the effects are going to be in the rest of the system.
Well,
nothing is divorced from everything else. Everything operates in conjunction with the other thing. Like you say, the rivers, so many cubic feet, you get red tide. So many cubic feet, you don't get red tide. But you got hurricanes that are bringing us water, maybe not taking the water away from us. Who knows how it all is working out in the end, but it's all interconnected.
Yeah, everything affects everything else. And in the harbor, there's redfish, snook, tarpon, sharks, black drum, a holiday weekend coming up, and we don't really know what's been going on in the Gulf because you would die going out there.
Right.
Let's face it. That was the kiss of death. The Category 4 hurricane in the Gulf, no matter how far away it is going to bring in massive waves.
Yeah. It's going to make it a little sporty.
Yeah. Sporty's a good word for it. We're talking Olympic-level sporty. So, on the inside of the harbor's been actually doing very well with little to no red tide anywhere in Charlotte Harbor proper, from Cape Hayes, Upper Harbor proper, Cape Hayes North, Pirate Harbor North, you know, Myakka River, Peace River. It's all been clean and green and just good loads of fish with a lot of ladyfish and stuff out there. Are the ladyfish disappearing?
No, there's actually still quite a few schools of the ladyfish out there. It's kind of impressive because last year we didn't have that many schools like we normally do, because every year it should be like this with schools scattered throughout the whole harbor. And last year it didn't really happen, but this year been hearing lots of schools. There's been two big schools off the 41 bridge there between 41 bridge and the Port Charlotte beach.
Right.
And then there's half a dozen other schools down the west wall and the east wall. So it's been kind of nice because there's been a lot of little fry out there that they're feeding on.
I wonder what the fry are.
Some of them are actual glass minnows, like legitimate glass minnows.
Right.
And then the others, not really sure.
Could be anything. Could be snook. Could be... Mm-hmm. The problem with people when they see minnows, they think minnows fry bait. But it doesn't often occur to most of us that what are those babies for? Are they actually just bait fish, or are they snook, mahi,
tarpon?
What are these minnows that constitute the sink? Could be trout babies, could be almost anything.
Right.
Because people think of tarpon as a 6-7 foot long fish, but it starts out microscopic.
Yeah.
And then has to get bigger from there.
And it doesn't even start to distinguish a tarpon until it's about, I think, two inches or something like that is about when it starts to look like a tarpon. But prior to that, you actually have to put it under a microscope to look at it because it resembles an eel.
Right. So
it looks nothing like a tarpon at first.
We don't know what the ladyfish are feeding on, but I'm always glad when they show up. It's kind of a bellwether for the harbor. Mm-hmm. When we get the big schools of ladyfish in, we know the harbor's in pretty good shape. Here's one random question. Do you think the ladyfish are hatched here, or are they like a Gulf plankton fish and then come in as they get bigger? Because they don't live in Charlotte Harbor. Ladyfish are not residents of Charlotte Harbor. We get the schools in, they feed, they do whatever, but then they move on. And the reason I know this is I've only had one time where I ran into schools of ladyfish that were 28, 30 inches long, and that's an adult ladyfish.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure about that one. I'm going to have to look that one up because I honestly don't know enough about them as far as their breeding habits, or are they considered migratory species or even a pelagic species.
RJ, any?
I don't know either. I know we dove off of Flamingo, Florida on a couple of wrecks that were out there, and there were some big ladyfish in the water, like you were saying. So I don't know if they stay offshore. Not out in deep water, but I think they're around the islands and things like that. And then they come in to feed. You know, they're following the feed, I think.
Well,
they're following that fry, wherever it might be.
I think they follow the fry, but they also predator avoidance.
Yes.
Because there's a lot less big predators in the harbor than there would be out in the Gulf.
Yeah, that makes perfectly good sense. Same thing with there's not a lot of big predators close to shore running along the beaches. And
yeah, up here we've got snook and redfish, and there's probably a tarpon or something. But when you get out in the Gulf of Mexico, you can have the snook, the redfish, the cobia, the grouper. I mean, there's tuna, whatever. You know, so it might be to avoid some predation and also to just to find more food. Because the average in the harbor for ladyfish is about 8 inches to 16.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's about average size.
So every once in a while you'll see a 20 inch or so, but only once have I ever caught ladyfish that were all in that 30 inch range.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I've gotten one in my lifetime, but all the biggest ladyfish I've got have always been at night, except for that one that I caught that was. I thought it was my very first tarpon when I was a kid.
Right.
It was almost 4 pounds, if I had to guess. It was as big as a soda bottle around.
Now, what's the red tide been doing to the snook?
Some of the areas, it's definitely killed a few because it's gotten into, like, the Boca Bayou. It's been in there twice now and basically cornered them. Then there's been a few out along the beaches that have gotten killed, but most of the snook have been actually moving. Moving up into the harbor and along the edges of the intercoastal mainland side to get away from it.
It's accelerated the fall return home thing.
Yeah.
Because snook, their eggs need to be born in salt water so they get the proper buoyancy and can float. That way the eggs hatch, they go on about their business, they swim to wherever they want to go. But a snook is a homebody, and it's one of the only fish. I would say snook and sand bream mm-hmm. are one of the two fish that actually will live its life in the harbor.
Right.
But every spring they go out towards the Gulf of Mexico. Every fall they come back. But I think it's accelerated the push back up into the harbor mm-hmm. because I'm hearing more and more stories of bigger snook up here.
Yeah. Yeah, it's still been a little off, but they're... You're definitely hearing each day more and more reports of them, and it still seems to be a little early, but I think you're right with the red tide causing them to speed things up to get away from that. And because we actually have ladyfish up in the harbor right now feeding, I think that's helping promote those fish to keep coming in further rather than staying down a little bit closer to that intercoastal.
Now, I'm going to speculate that the middle of the harbor, where we have the Alligator Creek Reef, some of the deeper holes, stuff like that, probably have very high big snook populations right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of food out there. These are 40-inch plus fish. They're not, you know, the mangrove huggers that 30-inchers and, you know, 20 to, you know, 30-inchers. These are big fish.
Right.
And able to, you know, look nose-to-nose with tarpon, I'm going to speculate that I think the middle of the harbor's probably got some very big populations. We have a few small boats sunk out there, some mini reefs made by different people illegally, but doesn't change the fact that they're still there.
Right.
But I think a lot of these, especially in that straits from Boca Raton Pass going towards Bernstor, mm-hmm. between Pine Island and Cape Hayes, there is several little mini reefs out in there of different objects. And they have to be loaded up with monster snook.
I would think so, absolutely. You know, the other thing that adds to some of that stuff out there is this time of year. It's not unusual for there to be oak limbs or palm trees or anything like that.
Oh, I saw a monster tree floating down the river the other day.
Right.
Looked out the front window, and I thought it was a boat at first. But it had the root ball on it, and then good-sized trunk, and then the tree, you could see most of the branches were gone. But you could, at first glance, I thought it was big enough it looked like a boat. And right. then I saw it going by, I went, oh, my God, that's a tree.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, I don't see that very often coming down the Peace River.
No, you don't. But a lot of times, you know, you got your waterlogged trees that are actually going to be submerged, that just from the natural water flow from the river flowing to extremely strong tides with full moons and stuff like that can slowly move those things downriver. You know?
This one was weird enough. It was floating, so it must have been, like, fallen over, semi-attached to the bank, and the bank eroded out.
Right.
And because it didn't have leaves on it that I could see, so it had definitely gone over a while before, but still buoyant enough where it could float.
Wow. That would have been neat to see cruising down the river. Yeah, I want to see it with a boat real close, but
as long as I was going slow, it's going to be good.
Yeah,
I've seen. I was heading up river, and somebody had pilings they let loose, and it was broadside in front of the boat before I knew it was there. And I grabbed I pushed the jack plate and the tilt button at the same time and went, ah, damn, and just punched the boat, figuring the only hope I had was to jump it. And it worked. The boat went up in the air until the motor caught on the pileg. And boom, nosed me down in the water. I mean, messed the motor up real bad. I had to replace it.
Right. I can imagine.
But I was hoping that trim was going to go up fast enough, but it just didn't quite make it. If I could have got probably an extra 2 miles an hour, it would have been a clean jump. But I'm coming off the back, I just didn't go far enough and caught the motor.
Yeah, that's scary.
But always two choices. Pull your throttles back and go as slow as you can, which meant the nose would have dropped and I would have pushed right into it with the bow of the boat. Effectively probably coming to a dead stop and crunching the front of the boat, or try and get the nose up so I could go over the top of it.
Right.
So a lot of weird decisions you got to make. And all you can do is say, well, I did the best I could at the moment, because either one could have been right. You know, in my estimation, with what I had, the time I had, powering down, trimming up was the best option I could think of. But doesn't mean it was the right option. Sharks.
Yeah.
Now, do you think, are these sharks big enough to be following the tarpon, or they're just sharks?
They're just little sharks, mostly. I have not heard of any of the bigger lemons around or any of that stuff. No bigger bull sharks. Everything is, like, pretty much 4 feet or less. That seems to be the majority of what I'm hearing about out there. And the weird part is like, I know you and I did this several years ago, but if I remember right, it was earlier in the summer. There's guys out there catching, like, bonnet heads out in the 20-foot holes and down by the Cape Hayes Reef and stuff like that, way out in the open water again.
And the weirdest part about it is this is the only time of year they hit fish.
Yeah.
But I've caught them on sardines, half a thread fin, and all winter long and later in the fall through the winter seasons.
It's all about
they
shrimp.
Don't eat it. They want a shrimp.
Yeah. They'll follow it. You know, I've had them chase white bait, like teasing it like a cat or something, but I've never had them hit it.
Right.
It's really, but I don't understand that.
Once they get out in the middle of the harbor, it seems like maybe it's a nutritional thing where so often they go out to get different nutrients, you know, eat fish instead of shrimp or something.
Maybe trying to build up some of their reserves for the wintertime.
I don't know. It's a really strange thing, but fish that don't eat this, and all of a sudden, yes, they do.
Yeah.
Weird.
No, it doesn't make any sense.
Any thought, RJ?
I'm going to go backwards to the big snook in the middle of the harbor, and I'm going to think that these big guys are going to just be around structure.
Yeah, they'll sit in the holes, open gravel bottom, structure.
Yeah, I'm going to say, you know, they're 60 inches long, so they're a fairly good target for the sharks that are here now. And we've got smaller, very agile sharks as opposed to the bigger boys. And they're more likely to be able to grab a snook. So I'm going to guess that these big snook are going to be around anything that gives them protection, that they're not going to be out in the open anymore.
Yeah. It's not something anybody else will tell you about. People think of snook as hugging the shoreline,
yes,
which is very, very true for the smaller ones.
Right.
But when you get into these big ones, they seem to travel that deeper water. They don't seem to come up along the shorelines. They seem to like that deep water. They want to find something to hang out around. But they have a different behavior, which I get, because my behavior is very different than what it was when I was 18.
Thank God for that.
Yeah, that's true. The world doesn't need me.
At least he slowed down a little bit, boys and girls. Yes. Not by much.
And you know what was weird that slowed me down the one day after getting that second vaccination shot? It messes with your skin. Being diabetic, I shoot myself with a needle 2, 3, 4 times a day. Right? No big deal. Boop, in, done. That day, just touching my skin with that needle was like, oh my God, does this hurt? Made the skin really sensitive. And sitting in there, and, you know, we got the air conditioning going, and my skin was cold, not the muscles, but it just felt like my skin was cold. It was very strange. Did that happen to you, Robert?
No. No, I don't remember that part. I mean, I had definitely some sensitivity, but I was just body aches. And the chills, but the full-blown, like, to the core, like, hypothermia thought I was having.
So, yeah, but I was different because it didn't go in like hypothermia. It literally just felt like my skin was freezing. Inside, I was fine. You know, the muscles didn't feel cold, but the skin did. It was really weird. But if you've had COVID, when you get your first shot, you'll probably get sick. If you don't get sick on the first shot, you will on the second shot. But, and I think it has to do because it overloads your system. If you've had COVID, you already have a lot of antibodies and all this other kind of stuff. When you get your first shot, it just blows up, makes you sick because your body goes, oh my God, I got to repel this. And where your body fights stuff is fevers, you know, shaking, all the nasty things your body does when it's trying to make you healthy again. But if you haven't had COVID, your first shot, you don't feel anything. When your second shot, and that overloads your system, that's when you feel it. But weird. But so if you go down and get your first shot and you don't get, and you get sick, could have gone, well, I already had the immunity. Didn't have, you know. But that's your test. Redfish, do we get any of the big, big redfish coming in?
Yeah. Yeah, there's been some big adult schools out there. There's been some off and on in Whidden Bay, up there around, what's that main island north of Devilfish?
North Devilfish is down right by Boca Raton Pass.
Well, going towards Placida from Devilfish.
Yeah, you got Devilfish, and then you got, I don't know.
Sandfly.
Sandfly, yeah.
There we go. That, up around Sandfly in that area, there's been a couple schools. I had a kid in the other day. Him and his girlfriend were out at Dawn's Crack and had
hitting mosquito, no-see-em, horsefly. It was like... I knew it had a bug.
They got six of them, 30 to 36 inches, all on artificials. And he showed me a picture that was absolutely stunning because the sun was just starting to come up, so he had this beautiful sunrise in the background with these fish. He did see a few dead snook, a couple dead trout, and some mullet floating around, but that were days old, he said. So some red tide and wind had blown some of those fish up in there, but he was still catching redfish around all that.
Guy telling me the other day, well, I was fishing there and the red tide was terrible. There's dead fish all over the place. I said, were you coughing? He said, well, no. I said, then there was no red tide there.
Right.
It may have been there before you got there or whatever, but there was no red tide while you were there.
Right.
Well, there was dead fish. I said, never mind.
Yeah.
How do you explain to something to people who won't pay attention? How do you get across that we're talking about if this happens, that happens, cause and effect, right? And they won't believe you. You're lying to them. You're making this up because you're a conspiracy theorist.
Right.
I don't get it. I've literally nowadays, I'm just like, oh, okay, you're right. It was bad red tide.
Yeah, people don't understand how much it moves around and how long it takes for those fish and how long those fish will float for.
No, that was a misstatement. It's not that they don't understand. They're unwilling to understand or unable to understand.
Well, it's the unwilling to understand. That's the hardest argument to win.
If
you're talking to somebody that's not willing to understand, you're just wasting your time.
And, you know...
Just say, yep, whatever you say, and move on.
Guy was talking to me about something, and I started at the beginning, and I'm going in to show him the whole thing he asked me about so he would actually be able to do it. He's like, well, forget that. I don't need that much basics. You know, get to the point on this. And I'm like... Okay, well, the point is, you got to do this. He's like, okay, well, what else? He was showing me different stuff. I said, you got to do this and this. Well, what about this? I said, that would take too long. Mm-hmm. He's like, what? I said, you wouldn't like the answer. It would take too long. And I'm just not fighting it anymore. We've got a whole bunch of people out there who are completely... It's funny how years ago, remember how people would come in and get me going so I'd go on a rant so they could learn all this different stuff?
Right.
And now they just, you know, give me two sentences and let me go on with it. I'm good. I know they didn't get smarter. I'm 100% sure they're not smarter.
Yeah. No, I get it.
So we've talked about the little sharks. Is there a reason that there's not big sharks?
Well, they give birth and then they move back out to offshore, you know, because your larger sharks like more open water areas. The majority of those sharks, like bull sharks, they like open water. They're an open water species. They're not a bottom dweller or anything like that. So they're following food sources. And once they come in short of pup, they're done. Same way with hammerheads. Hammerheads are definitely a full-blown open water species. The odd part is the lemon sharks that I've never really been able to understand of what, because lemon sharks are primarily an offshore to shallow offshore species. But they move in here every August. And I know that they gave birth before that because their birthing months on pretty much all species is April and May, with the occasional still pupping out in June. The only thing I can figure is that the majority of your lemon sharks are pupping out down in the Keys and the Marquesas and all that stuff in that shallower, you know, Everglades
right,
down there.
Helping the babies avoid larger predators.
Yeah, and then the adults slowly migrate up here to feed on the schooling mullet and the schooling ladyfish that they really predominantly like as a food source all the way around.
Well, I can see why they would show up here October, November, because that's when you get the mullet runs.
Mm-hmm.
Or used to get them anyway.
Used to, yeah.
So many things have changed drastically. Let's see.
Well, it's just like the schools of redfish showing up in August and September now instead of October. You know, it's been like that now for several years, where they're here a month to 2 months early. It's like almost guaranteed now. It's weird. Doesn't make any sense.
What holiday weekend is this?
Labor Day.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
So Friday, Saturday, or Saturday, Sunday, Monday, or.
Well, I'm actually taking Friday, Saturday, Sunday,
Most
Monday.
Most people are.
Just because. Just because I want to.
Technically Monday, but like a lot of your doctor's offices and probably most of your county buildings will probably be closed on Friday because it's just another excuse to close.
So
early.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday is the holiday weekend.
School's still in effect, but Monday school is off.
Okay.
Right, and you know what? Unlike other holidays, it doesn't really increase the boating traffic from what I remember.
It's weather dependent.
Yeah.
If it's beautiful weekend and they're forecasting everything
rain.
Wonderful, but you can say the same thing about July 22nd or whatever. If it's a gorgeous
day, people are going to go out.
Yeah, and the weird part about it is it can end up being a gorgeous day and not have a big increase in boating traffic, but for most people, boating and fishing is a planned event.
Right.
They want to know, you know, 5 days, 3 days before, at least 2 days before. Very seldom do they decide, okay, tomorrow we're going out. What I've noticed is it's multi-day planning event.
Right.
And which could be that the largest majority of our customers are retired.
Right.
And so they're used to planning their day. But I'm not sure.
No, it doesn't make any sense anymore. It used to make a lot more sense, but now lately it doesn't. I mean, there's so many people that have moved here that are working from home now that their schedules are so completely fluid. It's weird.
Yeah, but they still go shopping either Friday night or Saturday. And, you know, they still boil into the restaurants Friday night instead of on Tuesday or Wednesday. You know, they're working from home on the computer. They're retired.
Yeah.
It's Friday night. Let's go get something to eat. Well, for the rest of us, it means okay, it's kind of nice because when we go out on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, there's almost nobody there.
Yeah.
So, let's see. Tarpon, we've talked about them as food for the sharks and what may or may not be going on. What are you going to go out? Now, three different levels of tarpon, tarpon lures, and tarpon fishing. And one is the canal tarpon. Then you've got canal tarpon back on the flats. And then you've got tarpon in the harbor proper outside of the sandbars. Mm-hmm. So the harbor, inside of the sandbars, and in the canals. And they're all feeding on different size stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the things that's been going on is the subwalk from Rapala, the great big one and the mid-sized ones, mm-hmm. have become very good lures for in the open harbor and the small mid-sized one for back on the flats, but they don't seem to be very effective at all in the canals.
No, and I mean the canal tarpon, I mean tarpon are our hardest fish, honestly, there is to target. It's a very difficult species, and I think when you put them into a canal system, whether they're the juveniles, which is the majority of them, to adults, they just become 10 times harder to get figured out to get to chew. It seems like they definitely feed on small baits in general when they're in those canal systems, whether it's an 80-pounder or a 10-pounder.
I think that's why we sell so many of those hyperlastic, those little tiny ones that Patrick has got.
Yeah.
They're sold out again. We got to order more.
Are they really?
Yeah, there's only one color's half full and the other color's still there. But it's weird. I mean, we're going to have to triple up on the orders on them because it's going to be a good little snook lure. It's a little tiny sucker.
Right.
But, man, they fly off the shelves. I don't know. Outside of canal tarpon, it's tiny. I mean, you could almost switch it over for crappie.
Right.
It's almost that small.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for canal tarpon and for when the snook lights, you know, when the snook move into the canals and the water gets clearer, where those snook lights are going to be more visible, I think it'll be great for those, too.
And I have no idea what the name of it is.
Neither do I.
I know it's the Hyperlastic brand, you know, a band of anglers, but little tiny suckers, a little spinner on the back of it, and it really is kicking butt. I mean, I'm just shocked. I just put those up on the shelf.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to have to look for that.
I know we're the only ones that carry them, and the only reason we carry them is it's Patrick's, and we're friends, so I carry everything of his, but wow. And it's got to be a decent little snook lure. You think it would only work on the lights? You think got to be a great little trout lure if everything else is eating
that. I'm sure trout will eat the snot out of it this winter.
Trout and ladyfish, stuff like that, I bet you take it out, just tear them up with it.
Yeah. No, I think it's got multitasking species without doubt, and like you even said, possibly for crappie.
Yeah, but it's just weird that it's got to be canal tarpon that people are buying them for.
Yeah.
Because I put them all up, the pegs were full, and within a couple of days, they're just empty. I have no idea. I wish I could remember the name of it. It came in so far under the radar that I was walking by working with Chuck, because we're putting up some new pegboard walls. We're trying to get a T-shirt section going, so Chuck's working on all that. It's all turning out nice. But I'm looking there, and I went over to see, okay, what do we want to put on this wall or that wall or the next thing, you know, when you and I were talking, and I went, holy cow, they're all gone.
Yeah, I didn't even notice they were gone.
It's way too far under the radar. Tarpon in the holes out there in the middle of the harbor,
mm-hmm.
We know the DOA bait buster is going to be pretty good,
yep.
And the Rapala subwalk and the large size. Is there anything you can think of that when they hit that midday and all morning long they've been biting the ladyfish? Now, you can use ladyfish live or dead,
mm-hmm.
but is it better live or dead? And how do you put it out? Bobber, no bobber?
I'm going to put it out both ways. I mean, honestly, depends on how many ladyfish. And I would prefer them alive. But they'll still hit them dead. I've caught too many tarpon over the years on dead ones because it's really difficult to keep ladyfish alive and alive well. You know, yeah. Sometimes you can get one or two to stay alive, but you try to put four or five in there, most of the time they're dead.
And you want to have that VMC hot skirt jig.
Yeah.
Hook them, reel them up, lift them up right over to live well, let them fall in.
Yeah, exactly.
VMC hot skirts, it's just the best way to get them alive.
It's the ultimate live ladyfish lure there is.
Yeah. So, but I'm going to start down by Cape Hayes. I want to work that area out front Cape Hayes. Figure about from 5 foot of water out a half a mile and all the way from halfway out on the sandbar going to the south to about 3/4 mile north of the mangroves in that kind of square area. It's kind of like a half a mile by 3/4 mile stretch right there.
Right.
They seem like it's a morning stage up. Mm-hmm. By, I would say, 9, pretty much they've moved on and gone up into either the middle hole, the Pirate Harbor hole. They're going somewhere else.
Yeah.
But the two places I see them stage up is right next to Fisherman's Village on the west side. There's a big flat out there, and they're gone from there by 8:30 in the morning. They're done. Mm-hmm. When the sun comes up, you'll see them rolling all over that flat, and then they move on. And same thing down by Cape Hayes. If you're there first thing in the morning, you got a bunch of ladyfish. After that 9 o'clock, maybe 10 at the outside, I'm looking everywhere else. I'm going through the holes up towards the Myakka. I mean, it's the big tour around the harbor.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much the best way to do it, too.
Now, in the morning, you can be using that big Rapala, the bait buster, or live or dead ladyfish, mm-hmm. either. And you're pretty much drifting. You're not anchored up with this.
No.
But once they stop hitting that, any idea what you could use? Because they get to the middle of the day, and it seems like they switch over to little white bait.
Yeah, they switch over to that slurping kind of thing.
And yeah.
What I would personally do, I'm going to start cutting up bait. I'm going to start chunking ladyfish, chunking mullet, and try
like
that.
Like three-finger chunks? Two-finger chunks?
Probably the size of my fist. I mean, I'm going to do like a ladyfish cut in half or a mullet cut in half.
I don't think you're going small enough. I think you'd have to go in, at least in thirds or quarters, depending on the ladyfish, because these baits they're going after, they're slurping them up,
mm-hmm.
and they're small.
They are, but what I've noticed is that there's times where they're coming up and slurping, but you're seeing them staying really close to the bottom rather than seeing them suspended higher up in the water column. It's like they come up, they come through the baits, and then they go back down and settle on the bottom. And with this side scan thing, it's honestly cheating.
But yeah, it's definitely cheating.
You watch them on the side scan, a lot of times this time of year, they're staying very low in the water column, like real close to the bottom as they move along. And then they come up to feed on stuff closer to the surface. So I think having a dead bait down real close to the bottom might be the trick to do it.
Yeah, I've got a... remember Paul Mickley?
Yeah.
He's working for a distributor over on the East Coast. They sell marine electronics and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to call him up and see what I can get for the big boat. And see if, because I know I want to put a through-hole depth finder up in the front of the boat, if possible.
Right.
But if I can't, I'm wondering if I can get a side scan that will shoot forward.
They have something like that, yeah.
Because I don't need to know where the boat has been. I want to know where I'm going.
Right.
I see these people with 40, 50-foot boats. And they don't have anything on the front of the boat to tell them what's happening up there. The depth finder is literally 40 feet away from the water they're going in. They say, well, we'll work on plane. I said, I don't care. I want to idle into like an anchorage
especially
for overnight.
Unknown areas. Absolutely.
You know, I'm putt-putting going in there. I'm doing 3 miles an hour. I'm not on plane trying to find a place to anchor. And so anyway, but that's just me. I'm going to probably be starting a blog about all this here in a little while because we had a 6 months lag where, okay, I was going to start it a while ago, but it would have been 6 months till the next post. But now things are actually happening, so I can start going about it from the beginning and be able to skip that 6 months where nothing nothing went on. We're almost done, aren't we?
Yep, a couple minutes.
Yep. Watch the weather right now.
Yeah.
It's really weird. The weather is very strange, not unusual for this time of year, but if you're going out in the Gulf, watch for pop-up storms between you and where you're going back into. If you're sitting out there and everything's nice, that's one thing. But if you're out there and all of a sudden you see a big bunch of storms starting up by shore, time to head in. Yeah. And same thing in the harbor. Try not to let the storms get between you and where your home port is.
Right. And less concern, I mean, it's a problem, is the wind, obviously, and the waves. But right now we've got a lot of lightning in the area. I mean, because of the Saharan dust and a few other things, we're getting a lot of lightning strikes. We had a lightning strike here at the radio station, about 100 yards away from the tower, took out all the routers, took out the distribution point on the antennas, and we didn't even get hit, actually. So out on the water, it's the same thing. The lightning is your big enemy, much less the wind. A lot of boaters can handle the wind and the waves, but you're not going to handle a lightning strike. Even if it's 100, 200 yards away from you, you can still get hit with the EMP from it.
Yeah.
So when you start to see thunderstorms, it's time to go home. Not, well, it's a mile or two away, we can hang here. No.
I've actually been knocked unconscious by lightning.
I think you have one of the world record for numbers of times.
Yeah,
hit.
So, and I've never taken a direct hit, but
yes.
It was close enough to literally knock me unconscious, you know. But not that I'm that conscious now. I don't think there's anything else to go through except thank you guys for listening. We appreciate you putting up with us all these years, and we'll be back next week. Stop down to the store, getting some cool stuff in. I said,